It is true that we are made up of what we eat. The nutrients required for the DNA, for the rebuilding of the cell, we looked earlier in the week how we're constantly being remade, are vital. And also, the way we feed our body has a lot to do with the way it functions, the way we see, the shiny hair, the skin, the muscle, the bones. So it is all a puzzle to me that doctors do not learn more about nutrition. I have met some doctors that are very knowledgeable on nutrition, but they have done their own research. We're going to spend 2 lectures on food. In this first lecture, we're going to be looking at the acid-alkaline balance in the body. If you've ever owned a swimming pool, you have to test the acid-alkaline every day, because if the water goes to acid, then the pipes corrode. If the water goes to alkaline, algae grows on the pipes. The hydroponic gardener, he's constantly testing the pH of the water that the plants, the roots of the plants sit in, because if the water goes to acid, the roots burn. If the water goes to alkaline, he doesn't get the speed of uptake of minerals out of the water and into the plant. Even slight changes in the acid-alkaline in the body can have dramatic effects on the body. So let's have a look. We're going to look at the acid-alkaline balance on the pH scale. Why does the acid-alkaline scale, why is it called pH? The acid-alkaline scale is called pH because when you dissolve acid in solution, it gives off hydrogen ions. When you dissolve alkaline in solution, it gives off hydrogen ions. So pH basically means potential hydrogen or potential hydroxy. The acid end is a reading of 0, the alkaline end is a reading of 14, and right in the middle we've got neutral. Neutral is neither acid nor alkaline, and it sits at 7. Water should be 7, but unfortunately not many waters are 7, especially if they've got fluoride or chlorine in them, they become a little acid. Blood has a reading on the pH scale. Blood's reading on the pH scale sits between 7.35 and 7.4. All blood must be within that scale, because if blood pH goes up to 8, that person will go into a coma and die of alkalosis. If blood pH drops down to 7.22, that person can go into a coma and die of acidosis. So there can't be much variation there, and we don't have to worry about the pH of our blood, because there are 2 organs that are constantly working to keep it within that range. One is your lungs. When we exercise, we start breathing deeply, especially when we're running up a hill. We don't choose to do that. The reason why we start breathing deeply is that we're burning more fuel, and as we burn more fuel, more carbon dioxide is given off, and maybe even a little bit of lactic acid. And so the blood pH starts to get a little more acid. So the brain says to the lungs, breathe deeply, we need you to breathe out the carbon dioxide, and we need you to breathe in the oxygen, because we need more oxygen. Oxygen alkalizes. Getting rid of that carbon dioxide also helps to alkalize. That's how the lungs do it. That's why the best thing you can do if you're at all stressed, even the heart rate is getting a little bit uneven, if someone has heart arrhythmia, breathe deeply. Breathe deeply and get that life-giving oxygen in, which will soothe the nerves and have an alkalizing effect. The other organ is the kidneys. The kidneys are constantly working to keep the pH of the blood within that range. Let me show you how it does it. This is the kidneys. We have 2 of them, and the little filtering units that I'm going to draw, they're all on the edge. That's called the cortex. So let me show you. I'm going to draw 1 little filtering unit, and what happens is the blood grows into that little filtering unit, And the filtrate that comes out of the blood weaves around the tubules and then down into the bladder. So here are the tubules that take the filtrate out of the filtered blood. And the blood weaves in. So it weaves into the little filtering units where it's filtered, and then the blood weaves around like this. So where on the kidneys is the filtering units? It's right on the edge, but the tubules, basically, they weave round like this. And then there's, you've got your ureter. There's your ureter from the other kidney, then the bladder, and then your urethra, where, of course, that's a little droplet of urine. That's where it comes out. In a 24-hour period, these little filtering units filter 1,800 litres of blood. Now, we don't have that much blood. Every 2 minutes, 1.5 litres is being filtered. And out of that 1,800 litres of blood, 180 litres of filtrate is filtered out. But we don't urinate out 180 litres a day. Otherwise, I'd have to leave every 5 minutes. For the presentation, we only urinate out 1.5 litres approximately. So where's the rest? Where's the 160 litres? There's a reabsorption here, and it's in that reabsorption area that pH is being monitored and balanced if possible. So let's say the pH of the blood is getting too acid for various reasons, which we're going to be looking at. If the pH of the blood gets too acid, then extra acid is dropped into the tubules to be urinated out. So one way to test this is to put a bit of litmus paper into the urine. And you can see the pH there. Let's say the pH of the blood is getting too alkaline. Extra acid is pulled out of the tubules back into the blood. Remember, every 2 minutes, 1.5 litres is being filtered. So this monitoring system is constantly working. It's called hemiostasis, or the kidneys balancing the pH of the blood. So we don't have to worry about the pH of the blood because the lungs and the kidneys are constantly doing that for us. Let me give you a story to illustrate. This lady that I'm about to tell the story about, we'll call her Julie. She was coming to our retreat for the 1 week. This is a couple of years ago. She rang up Saturday night and she said, "I'm very worried about coming to your retreat." I said, "Why is that?" She said, "Well, I'm about to go on dialysis." She said, "My legs are swollen, my blood pressure's up." Can you see why her legs are swollen? You see, not only is pH balanced there, but sodium and water levels are also monitored and balanced there. Blood pressure's monitored there. So your kidneys not only filter your blood, they play a very important role in hemiostasis, or keeping the balance. Can you see why her legs were swollen? Because her kidneys weren't functioning properly. So they were unable to properly balance the fluid and the sodium levels in her body. And her blood pressure was up. I said, "Oh." I said, "What's your concern?" She said, "My concern is that when I go through the detox, I'll get even worse and my legs will get even tighter. Do you have a doctor there?" I said, "No, we don't have a doctor, but we're going to keep a close eye on you. And at any point, we can take you to the hospital an hour away if you so desire." She reluctantly said, "All right," and she came to our retreat. Now, early the next morning, do you remember that appointment God has with us early every morning? Remember I talked about it in Isaiah chapter 50, verse 4, "The Lord God hath given me the tongue of the learned, that I may know how to keep a word in season to him that is weary. He wakeneth morning by morning. He wakeneth my ear to hear as the learned." So early that morning, I had that divine appointment, which we each have. Every human being has it with God early every morning. Don't miss it. I said, "Father in heaven, what do I do for this lady? She's about to go on dialysis." We have basic herbs, but we don't keep a lot of herbs. We mostly use the herbs that we go through a lot. And then God put into my mind, my celery plants were going to seed, and celery is an excellent kidney herb. My parsley plant was going to seed. Parsley is an excellent kidney herb. My couch grass. Well, I won't say my couch grass. I'll only say it because it's in my garden, but I don't like it in my garden. I'm always pulling it out of my garden, but it is a kidney herb. So early that morning, I gathered these herbs together and I made a tea of them. I put them in a liter of water. I brought them to the boil. I also put some grated ginger so it tastes a little bit better, and ginger's anti-inflammatory. As we consulted together, I discovered that she was only drinking 3 glasses of water a day. She would look at her legs and say, I've already got enough water in my body. She was having 3 cups of coffee a day. And coffee has dehydrating agents. And the water she was drinking was not enough to make up for the dehydrating agents in the cup of coffee. So this lady was very dehydrated. I also discovered that she had a gluten intolerance. She had all the symptoms, brain fog, bloating. So I think it's a good idea to work on what you see. When you see those symptoms, that's what the body wants you to work on first. I said to her, I would like you to drink a liter of water a day, but I do not want you to drink a glass at once. I said, it's important to just sip the water through the day. And I would also like you to drink a liter of the tea. It was a thin tea. And before each glass of water, I want you to take a tiny little bit, almost the size of a sesame seed, of the Celtic salt. She said, salt? I've been told not to have salt. I said, this is mineralized salt. This is the Celtic salt. And the Celtic salt contains 82 minerals. It'll bring a balance in and out of the tissues. Okay, she said, but I will not be able to exercise with the guests. I said, no, you won't. But I said, what I'd like you to do is every hour I want you to rebound for a minute. You see, this fluid was lymphatic fluid. And I said, I just want you to get on the rebounder and do this. That's all you have to do. That's called the health bounce. This will stimulate the lymphatic system. She said, all right. Within 24 hours, the legs had gone down by half. She was very, very happy. Her kidneys weren't hurting her at all because she was sipping the water very, very slowly. By the end of the week, she was a very, very happy lady. She had found relief for some of these very uncomfortable conditions that she had had for so long. She emailed me 3 months later. She said to me, I don't have to go on dialysis. She said, my kidney function is not back to normal, but she said, it almost is. She said, oh, I just can't believe it. Psalm 104, verse 14, the Bible says that God gave herbs for the service of man. That's what your herbs do. They work on different parts of the body. It's not hard to buy a herb book and learn which herbs work for which parts of the body. Anyone can do that. Every home should have a herb book. One of my first herb books was Back to Eden by Jethro Kloss. Got some great information in there. She said, I don't have to go on dialysis. She said, thank you so much. I said, thank your body. It started to respond when you gave it the right conditions. And I know what she means. She did not know what to do. She was thanking us for the education she received at our retreat on how to give the body the right conditions for healing. She said, my liver function test is the best it's been for years. All my inflammatory markers are back to normal. She said, I'm considering going back to full-time work. Lovely story of how when the body's given the right conditions, it turns around. It revives, it restores itself. But I told her that story as an illustration to show that the kidneys not only are monitoring and balance the pH, but also sodium and water levels in the body, and also blood pressure. The blood pH cannot change, as we see, but the cellular pH can change. So the cellular pH should be very slightly acid, and there's a reason for that. Do you remember the hydroponic garden I mentioned? The hydroponic gardener, he tests the pH of the water that the roots are sitting in, because the water goes too acid, the little roots burn. If it goes too alkaline, he doesn't get the speed of uptake of minerals out of the water into his plant. So we are 75% water from the neck down, 85% water from the neck up, There are little chemical reactions, millions of them happening right at this moment. And the pH at the cellular level influences all those little chemical reactions. Interesting to note that the farmer, he aims for a soil pH of 6.4. The Bible says in Genesis 3:19, we come from dust, we go back to dust, we're dust. The pH of the soil and the pH of the cell, very similar. A 5.5 pH is where cancer thrives. A cellular 5.5 reading is where fungus thrives. Basically, you could say disease thrives in a cellular pH of 5.5. Now, notice there's only the drop of 1 point. But that drop of 1 point means 60% less oxygen available at the cellular level. And we also looked at the fact that cancer hates oxygen. And just 1 point, because it's logarithmic, it has a dramatic effect on the body. Where does Coca-Cola sit? It's a killer. It sits at 2.6. And it is true, some people drink it. Surely they don't realize. No, they don't. They're listening to the ads. And you look at the advertising campaign around Coca-Cola, it is the most fantastic that you'll see, because that's all they've got. All they've got is the ad, because there is nothing in that drink that has any health benefit at all to the human body, only destructive. Keeping to the 8 laws of health guarantees a more alkaline environment in the body. Pure air with its alkalizing oxygen, sunshine stimulating the movement of blood, keeping away all of the things that hurt helps to alkalize. Going to bed early helps to alkalize. Just the right amount of exercise a day alkalizes. The next law is proper diet. But after that, law number 7 is water. When we're dehydrated, that creates a more acid condition. When we're drinking just the right amount of water, it alkalizes. The 8th law is trust in divine power. When we're stressed, when we're worried, it can create an acid condition. That's why Jesus said in John chapter 14, verse 27, he says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you, not as the world gives, give I unto you." So he says, "Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be dismayed." Trust in God, have faith in God, allow his peace to help alkalize your whole system. I don't know about you, but some of my family and friends break every law every day, not even realizing it. Lungs and kidneys are struggling, but they're trying. But blood pH starts to drop, 7.35, 34, 33, alarm bells go off. And the last resort buffer system is called on. The most alkaline mineral, which is calcium, is pulled out of the bones as calcium phosphate into the blood, which immediately helps to alkalize that condition in the blood. 7.3435, whew, we're safe. But now at a cost. A couple of things are happening here. The bones are getting weaker because the calcium's been pulled out of the bones. But you've now got calcium phosphate floating through the blood. What's the body going to do with that? It dumps it in the kidneys as kidney stones, in the gallbladder as gallstones, contributing to build up on the eyes, the cataracts, building up to, or contributing to the build up inside the arteries. These are all illustrations of Newton's third law of motion. To every action, there's an equal and an opposite reaction. And as one writer said, this law never ceases to act as nature's equalizer, setting in motion compensatory forces to remedy every imbalance. Isn't that the true cause of disease? And imbalances happen. So many people are sick through ignorance, not realizing the effect of what's happening in their body. The most acidic substance is sulfuric acid, and on the scale of speed, sulfuric acid travels at the speed of light. The most alkaline is calcium, and on the scale of speed, it doesn't even move. But what probably affects more than anything is the food that we're eating. So let's have a look at the food. We're going to make a list of alkaline-forming food and acid-forming food. And you possibly will be surprised to see that the first food I put on the alkaline side is the humble lemon. But isn't the lemon acid? Yes, it is acid, but it's acid where it should be, which is stomach. That's the only part of your body that should be acid, the stomach. It must be acid because only an acid environment can break up your protein bonds, denature them, so to speak, because that protein cannot be absorbed into the blood unless it's broken down. So it needs that acid environment in the stomach. I have never met anyone with too much acid in their stomach. When we look at the gut, I'm going to show you a little bit more about the stomach and how it works. But when the lemon is broken down in the gastrointestinal tract and the minerals merge into the blood, then the tissues, it has an alkaline effect because the lemon is high in the alkaline minerals, which is sodium and potassium and calcium and magnesium. They are the alkaline forming minerals. So the lemon is acid where it should be and alkaline where it should be. Dark green leafy vegetables. Dark green leafy vegetables are very alkalizing. We should be eating dark green leafy vegetables every day. And if we don't eat dark green leafy vegetables every day, we really should have a dose of chlorophyll or green barley, barley greens. There's quite a few super greens. There's quite a few mixes that you can buy. Dark green leafy vegetables every day. Vegetables. Vegetables are alkaline, but there is an exception. And this exception is for some people, but not others. Let me explain. We're going to put a question mark here because some people can handle this and some can't. It's the tomato and the eggplant, sometimes called aubergine. Bell pepper, in Australia we call it capsicum. And potato. Now I am not referring to the sweet potato. The sweet potato is not a potato. It's a yam. So the sweet potato is totally different. I'm referring to what's commonly called the Irish or the English potato. For some people, these have an acid effect, and for some people, they have an alkaline effect. How will you know? Who will tell you? Your body will tell you. I've seen many people conquer their arthritis by stopping the nightshades. It appears when someone has an inflammatory condition in their body, these foods can feed that inflammation. We had one lady, she did our program a few years ago, and she was in her early 70s then. And she told me this story. It was an interesting story. She said that her and her husband were in their late 60s. They had a bit of arthritis, carrying a bit of excess weight. They found the yard a bit hard to manage. So they booked themselves into an aged care facility. They had their own little unit. Their daughter gave them a set of my DVDs and they watched them every night. And they said, this is interesting. We're retired now. We can do what we want. So they started to eliminate all the stimulants, especially when they heard what they were doing. They stopped their coffee. They stopped their nightly red wine. They started to go to bed a little earlier. They started to implement an exercise program. On hearing the effect of the nightshades on arthritis, they decided to eliminate all the nightshades. They started to drink more water. She said after 6 months, they'd both lost weight. I think they both lost about 20 pounds, 10 kilo. She said, I noticed that I did not have any arthritic pain anymore. In fact, she said the swollen joints were starting to go down, especially, she said, when we saw the poultice DVD and put some ginger sometimes, castor oil sometimes, poultices on the fingers. After about 10 months, they looked at each other and they said, what are we doing in this aged care facility? We're feeling so good. It's like we've got a new lease on life. So they got out of the aged care facility. They bought a big caravan and a four-wheel drive, and they decided to take a trip around Australia. And when they got to Misty Mountain, they came in and spent a week with us. And you could not wipe the smile off this lady's face. She said, I'm early 70s now, and she said, I have to tell you, I feel better now than I felt in my 50s. She said, do you think I could start eating the nightshade family again? I said, you can try. You've conquered your arthritis. Who will tell her? Her body will tell her. She told me that she discovered that her body let her have half a tomato 3 days a week. She have eggplant maybe once a fortnight. She found that her body could not tolerate the bell pepper, so she kept that out. She said, I have a little potato most days. Your body can tell you what no one can tell you. Listen to it. Be that good doctor that will always listen to what you're saying. If you cook tomato with an oil, the reason why it's important to cook it with an oil is it causes a release of the fat-soluble vitamins. So the Lebanese and the Italians, they knew what to do, and I think the nicest oil is the olive oil. When you cook tomato with olive oil, something's released that's not available in the raw tomato. It's not even available in the cooked tomato if you don't cook it with the oil, and that is lycopene. Lycopene is a potent antioxidant used to reduce the inflammation of the prostate gland. So every man over the age of 40 should be having a cooked tomato and olive oil dish maybe 3 times a week. Lovely base for your legumes. You put it with your kidney beans, you've got Mexican. You put it with your lentils, you've got an Indian dal. So your different legumes have different flavours. As you'll see tomorrow, when we look at the oil, you should not put the oil straight in the pan because you destroy it. But if you put the oil in when there's liquid, like with the tomatoes, and keep it on a low heat, you won't destroy the oil. There's another question mark, and that is fruit. Why does fruit have a question mark? Remember what we looked at earlier this week? Your vegetables are high in fiber, high in minerals, and low in sugars. Whereas your fruit, it's high in fibre too, but it's high in sugars and low in minerals. And if someone has a yeast presence in their body and they're eating a lot of fruit, the sugar in the fruit will feed the yeast. And as the yeast feeds on the sugar in the fruit, it gives off acetic acid. It gives off lactic acid. It gives off uric acid. And it gives off alcohol. Can you see what yeast is doing? It's much prefer the refined sugar, but if you're not going to give it the right refined sugar, it'll happily accept the sugar in the fruit. But what it does is it feathers its nest. It's just created the very environment that it thrives in, which is the 5.5 pH. When alcohol breaks down in the body, it breaks down to acetaldehyde. And acetaldehyde is a neurotoxin. A neurotoxin basically is a brain poison. And there are 5 places that you can be exposed to acetaldehyde. 1, if a person's having alcohol. 2, if a person has yeast and has a lot of fruit, it'll break down to alcohol, then acetaldehyde. Car fumes give off acetaldehyde. Cigarette smoke, acetaldehyde. And vinegar. Vinegar is acetaldehyde. Vinegar is 1 step short of alcohol in the process of making alcohol. So that's why fruit has a question mark. Some people can handle it, some can't. If someone has a yeast presence, my suggestion is go very low on the fruit, maybe just grapefruit, maybe just cherries, until you conquer your yeast problem. And my book, Self Heal by Design, it explains that. You can get that off Amazon. If someone wants to conquer their diabetes, they need to go very low on fruits. Not forever, it's just until you conquer your problem. Millet. Millet is an alkaline grain. What's millet? Birdseed. What does the budgie do? Oh, this is America. You probably don't have budgies. We have budgies, little birds. They spit out the hull and they eat the kernel. You can buy hulled millet and it makes a lovely porridge. But remember, you're going to need 1 cup of millet to about 4 cups of water. So 1 to 4 with the millet. It's an alkaline grain. It's gaining popularity because it's also a gluten-free grain. Quinoa, spelt quinoa, also an alkaline grain and also a gluten-free grain. Buckwheat, another alkaline grain and gluten-free grain. Amaranth. Amaranth isn't very well known. It's a tiny little grain, and when you cook it, it goes like a lump of glue, so it's not that nice. But putting amaranth, a little amaranth with your millet or a little amaranth with your quinoa when you're making like a porridge, that can be quite nice. And it's an attractive grain because it's gluten-free and it also is alkaline. Spelt. Spelt is an alkaline grain, as is kamut. At this point, I'd like to explain spelt and kamut. And in doing that, we're going to have a look at what they did to the wheat. In a previous lecture, we looked at what the hybridization of the wheat did to the starch structure. Now I want to show you what it did to the gluten structure. The original wheat that God made is called Enkenhorn. And Enkenhorn has a very fragile protein or gluten structure. It is not sure when. They estimate about several thousand years ago, Enkenhorn did a wild hybrid with a wild hybrid with a field grass and came up with the Emma strain of wheat. Now the Emma strain of wheat is not quite as fragile protein or gluten structure, but still fairly fragile. And it is the Emma wheat that went through intensive crossbreeding to produce the hybridized wheat of today. The hybridization of the wheat created an incredibly complex protein or gluten structure. It's almost only a cast iron gut that can break down that complex structure. When I talked about the starch previously, I also explained how they rushed through the hybridization of this wheat and they didn't really take time to do any safety studies. What is spelt? Spelt is a wild hybrid of the Emma. So the spelt, also the kamut, they have retained that fairly fragile protein or gluten structure. And if that spelt flour is made into a sourdough bread is like a cultured bread. And the culturing process breaks down the protein or the gluten in the grain. And so sourdough spelt or kamut, the sourdough process brings it right back to the original protein structure. The original fragile structure. Fragile is important because fragile means easy broken down in the gut, easy to digest. If the wheat is made into a sourdough, yes, it does break down the protein or the gluten structure. So you can see it is less complex, but it is still fairly complex. This explains the gluten intolerant epidemic we're seeing today, isn't that true? I've got a friend she's in her 70s and she's been a physician for 40 years. She said, 40 years ago, you never heard of gluten intolerance. 20 years ago, not much. Today, it's everywhere. Isn't that true? And when you understand how the wheat was hybridized, remember it went worldwide 70s, by the 1990s, every wheat product is out of the hybridized wheat. No wonder we have so much gluten intolerance. And how many on our carbohydrate list is from wheat? So there's your cereal, bread, cakes, pizza, pasta. The majority of those grains are wheat grains. I don't believe God meant us to just eat one grain. We've got such a variety of grains that we can use. So one problem is the structure was changed. Another problem is people just overdo the wheat. Another problem is babies are being fed food too young. The first teeth we get are the 8. So 4 at the top, 4 at the bottom, and they're called milk teeth. They're called milk teeth because that's really all babies should be having. But it's also taste time, maybe a little bit of a taste. I used to give my little ones a bit of cucumber when we sat to eat, but I never gave them food until they could sit, feed themselves, and they had a few teeth. That's common sense, isn't it? And by the end of the meal, there were little bits of cucumber everywhere, on the floor and on the tray, and maybe a few got in. See, that's taste time. That's when they're just starting to have little tastes of things. And when you feed children like that, they chew. When you give children, I call it slop, you know, this blended stuff, that they actually never learn to chew properly. And if there's no teeth, the baby should not be given food. That defies reason for me. So what's happening today is babies are being fed food too young. But let me go on with the illustration. So we've got 8 teeth, 4 at the top, 4 at the bottom. The next tooth are the molars. When the molars come through, they're the grinders. What do we grind? We grind grain. When the molars are fully through, then the glands in the mouth release the salivary amylase called ptyalin. And ptyalin is the enzyme that breaks down starch. So babies should not be receiving starch until the molars are through. What age is that? That can be anywhere between probably 20 months of age. Some babies are a little bit earlier, some babies are a little bit later. I didn't feed my babies food until quite late because I discovered this. So my daughter is 44, my son, next one, is 43. So I discovered it way back then. I read a book and it was talking about babies shouldn't be having food. And this book was written in the 50s. And when I investigated, I discovered, you know, babies weren't fed food 100, 200 years ago. Babies were breastfed sometimes till they were 5, often not eating food until they were about 2 years of age. You know what this means? This means that Einstein, Galileo, Rembrandt, Bach, Mozart, all these geniuses of time past, they were not fed food until later. And yet I have read a newspaper article by a pediatrician that said, feed your babies food when they're young and they will be smarter. And I thought, how can you get smarter than these brilliant men of time past? And it makes no sense. It never made sense to me to mash up all this food and put it in the baby's mouth. Have you noticed what the first thing it does? It comes straight back out, because when a baby sucks with the tongue and the top lip. And so when that food is put in, that mashed up slop, when that's put in, the baby uses its tongue and its top lip like it always does, and the food comes straight back out. One mother said, no, you just keep scooping it up and putting it back in. That defied reason for me. So I never gave my babies food until they could sit and remember taste time, when they just had those 8 teeth, just maybe a bit of banana, maybe a little bit of apple to just suck on, maybe a little bit of pear, because it's just taste time. And then by the time their molars are through, maybe they're having some steamed broccoli, maybe a little steamed cauliflower. I used to steam them and put them on their little tray, and then they could see the colour and they could taste the flavour. I also have come to the conclusion that parents dictate the taste of their children. My children ate lots of salad. They ate lots of vegetables because that's all they ate. If you start a child on pawpaw and pineapple and all the fruits, and then you give it a sweet lolly or a chocolate, I can tell you right now, they're not wanting to go back to the pawpaw. They're not wanting to go back to the fruits because they've tasted something more stimulating. And a child can be very happy with the vegetables until they eat meat. And once they eat that strong, stimulating flavour of the meat, they're not going to want to go back to the vegetables. So that's why I say to parents, be careful what you're introducing your children to. I wanted my children to be introduced to food that gave them strong, healthy bodies. And so that's the only food they know. And I never had any trouble with the whole six of them. They all just ate everything that was at the table. So people are getting gluten intolerance because they overeat the hybridized wheat. The wheat was hybridized and being fed food too young as babies, then the gut, the digestion is compromised. Lima beans and lentils and soy are the three alkaline legumes. And remember, we looked at soy. It's only a problem if it's been genetically modified and grown with poisons. Almonds and Brazils, these are the two alkaline nuts. They're both alkaline nuts, and the almond is the highest in protein. Excellent form of iron. Brazil nuts are very, very high in selenium. Selenium is needed by the thyroid gland to convert iodine into thyroxine. Mercury fillings have an affinity to selenium. So many people with mercury fillings, that's contributing to a thyroid problem. So please remove those mercury fillings and have 5 Brazil nuts a day. You'll get all the selenium that you need for the day. All your seeds are alkalizing. The most acid-forming substance that you can put into your body is the pure crystallized acid that's extracted from the sugarcane plant. It's pure acid. Now this list here are high in the acid-forming minerals, which is sulfur and chlorine and phosphorus. And this explains why next on the list is meat. When meat breaks down into the body, I mentioned this earlier in the week, when meat breaks down in the body, only 58% is burned as fuel. That's a 42% waste. And that waste is a sulfur waste. This explains why Dr. Colin Campbell, we could switch cancer cells on and off by the amount of meat and dairy products he was giving the rats. The hybridized wheat, the hybridization of the wheat created more of the acid minerals. But in Australia, wheat is grown with superphosphate. So there it's putting phosphorus into there and it's creating a more acid food. Aged cheese. What's the blue in the blue vein cheese? It's mold, so it's very acid. Now there is a pH of 7 here, and these are fresh cheeses. I myself don't eat this, but some people have told me that they quite enjoy goat feta or sheep feta. Those feta cheeses, because they're not aged cheese with the mould or the fungal factor, they sit at a pH of 7. Caffeine is acid forming. Alcohol is not a food, but it creates a very acid environment in the body. Tobacco is not a food, but it does create an acid environment in the body. Drugs are not a food, but your drugs, your chemicals have an acid effect on the body. All your other grains, other than the list on the alkaline side, all your other legumes, other than lima, lentil and soy, and all your other nuts, other than almond and Brazil, have an acid effect. To maintain the 6.5 environment, we need to be having 70 to 80% alkaline-forming foods and 20 to 30% acid-forming foods. So ideally, the acid-forming foods are from this little section here. What would most Americans be eating? Would it be 90% acid, 10% alkaline? No wonder people are sick. No wonder sickness abounds. And the sadness is that most people are sick through ignorance. It costs a lot of money to put ads on television. A lot of money. I can't afford to do that. And you look at the ads on television, they're pushing the cereal, they're pushing the breads, they're pushing this because I guess the money is behind it. And yet, the nation is sick. So what you can do for the health of you and your family, you start eating more vegetables. Start implementing more dark green leafy vegetables. Start pursuing the other grains. Drop these down. It's a great reason to go to a health retreat. This is a health retreat is a great way to detox from the stimulants. Now, it is not that cashews are bad, and it's not that macadamia nuts are bad. They are on the acid side. We need a little acid. It's not that rice is bad or oats. We need a little acid. So have a look at your ratio. Have a look at your meal and try and aim for a 70 to 80% alkaline-forming foods and a 20 to 30% acid-forming foods. Dr. Robert Young has written some excellent books on the acid-alkaline balance in the body. And you can explore that. Are you familiar with the hydrangea plant? The hydrangea plant is a big bush, great big bush, and it has huge flowers. And every flower is made up of a whole lot of little flowers. And sometimes you'll see a pink hydrangea plant, sometimes a magenta, that's bright pink, sometimes purple, sometimes blue. It's not different types of hydrangea plant. The gardener plays with the pH of the soil. And in playing with the pH of the soil, that produces different coloured flowers. So you can play with the pH of your soil, I mean cell, by the food and lifestyle habits. And you can either feed disease or you can create an environment in the body where disease can't survive just by the conditions that you're giving the body. Drinking more water, exercising every day, going to bed early, eliminating, and notice all the temperance list basically sits on the acid side. Daily sunshine, pure air. How many on our carbohydrate list are from the acid side? So cereal, bread, cakes, pizza, pasta, rice, sugar, and if you deep fry the potatoes in 2 week old oil, you can bring those over too. So no wonder the people are sick. So my encouragement to you is to be mindful of the effect that the acid alkaline has on your body and take steps to alkalize your body today.